Helen, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Branson.
Thank you for having me.
Last name Richardson, focus on the family. We've been looking forward to this.
Yes, we
have. I've got quite the information on foster care and adoption since I am the grandfather of an adopted African-American young girl through our son in Kansas City. And I got to tell you something. First of all, you're going to tell us a lot more about it. It's rewarding, but it's not easy.
Correct.
And
that all started with a foster program for them.
Oh yeah, right? Oh yeah. Foster and helping different kids and in and out, and then all of a sudden they moved to New York and find out that the young lady is back with her family where she had been abused. So they're just heart wrenched, and so they had their adoption license and their fostering license in Kansas, and through a miracle. Bingo, bango, we're in New York, and they got it done in like 25 minutes. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And they brought her out to New York, and the next thing, we have an adopted little Ingram. Helen, where are you from?
I am honestly from everywhere. I'm living here in Colorado Springs, and that's what's home now.
Now, everywhere, meaning in a military family, or just moved a lot?
Moved a lot. I lost my parents when I was little, and I was in and out of care, so that kind of set up a whole different style of life for me. And then when I turned 18, I just kind of continued and bounced around the U.S. and international for a little bit. And yeah.
Wow. Where did it all start for you, Helen? Where were you born?
Sacramento, California.
Oh, Sac. Yeah. That's great. There's a great railroad museum in Sacramento.
So were you a foster child?
I was in foster care, yes.
Well, walk us through that for just a minute, if you will, please. What was it like now that you're an adult and you look back? What was that like for you in the beginning?
Honestly, a lot of people, there's a stigma about foster care, I think, a little bit, especially ones back in the 80s and 90s. And for me, it was a great experience. I had amazing families. I've got good family. I don't remember all the details, but the details I do remember as a young child were positive. I remember a family that had a big, huge garden, and we got to play out there on sunny days, and a family that said you can call us mom and dad. And I know that there was one family that the father was a police officer, because I was in probably pre-K at the time, and he picked me up, and all of the other kids were super jealous that my dad, quote unquote, was a cop. So so all those policemen out there, you can impress lots of kids if you don't step into the space. So I had great experiences. I then moved into kinship care when I was 6 years old after my mom had passed away, and that's where relatives or kin-like, a relative-like people provide care for you. And I was in that, bouncing around to different family members until I was 18. And some were good. Some were really not so good. That's one of the great things I'm knowing today, and the opportunity I get to work in this area now and advocate for those for where I was as a young child, and knowing that a lot of kin-like programs or kinship programs are being overseen and more regulated now, so that the safety of kids is the top priority, that they are in safe, loving families.
What is it like? What was it like for you as a young person? And you know you're not going to be with that. I guess you don't know how long you're going to be with a family, but some of them you were probably with longer and shorter with others. And is that real disruptive? If you get attached to a family, my cousin up in O'Fallon, they fostered, and one of the situations they had is, boy, they'd get attached to some of those kiddos, and I guess the kiddos get attached to the families, but then all of a sudden you're gone off to somewhere else. Is that pretty traumatic for a young person?
It is. You know, that's really hard. It's good. Attachment is very important. That's how you learn from early on, even as a baby, to a mom and young children, especially if they've had a lot of transitions. Attachment is good. It can be hard. It's going to be harder for a child who can't understand and process the way an adult does. And it's not just that family attachment. Every move is a change in school, friendships, just known routines. I'm in this bed and this house, and I'm going to walk through this kind of a day. And then it changes the next day. And if you are 6 or 8 or even 15, your body is still growing and learning, and you don't have a sense of felt and known safety in your life. So each transition is hard, and that's why we're looking for, we know that there's 423,000 children in foster care, and a lot of them are in homes, And a lot of them aren't in homes. They're in residential facilities. They're in group homes. They're in other things or crowded homes that are currently licensed, but they really would be better if there was less children in the home. And then there's families who burn out or just have life changes. So that's where this need is, to always have families coming into the system. And you know, everyone's called for a different reason and a different level of involvement around foster care. You can foster, you can adopt from foster care, like my husband and I are doing right now, or you can support. And that's where you can come in and support worlds. Like we talk about, you mentioned that attachment. Well, say a child moves from one family to another, that mentor, like if you had someone who's mentoring a youth, that mentor would follow them. It's not tied just to that household, so they can keep that attachment relationship and still have solid people in their life who are there for them.
Helen, on this program, we have the opportunity to do a lot of human interest stories, and we love them. And boy, we have substance abuse, and some of our best interviews are the guys that sit at the table and say, let me tell you where I was. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you where I'm going, and let me tell you what I'm going to try to do to stay there. Having you as a foster child is pretty neat because you can relate to people. But I want to know a couple of things. 18 sounds awful young to me, Keith.
For us, even though they're in our 70s, it's a long time.
Even though my wife was 18 when we got married, okay?
Uh-huh, yep.
Seems awful young. I want to know what was going on that last 6 months in your mind when you're 17 and a half. And the door was shut and it's quiet and you've been all over. You're old enough now to know what's going on and you're sorting it out. So, you know, it's time for me to go out on my own. Did you make that decision, or did somebody come to the table and say, hey, guess what? You're done. How'd that work?
For me, the decision was made for me. The relatives I was living with made a decision that they didn't want to have me in their life anymore and told me that that was the end of the ride. Thankfully, I had gotten into college, and I was going to college, so I did have, which is very rare, not very rare, it can be rare for children in foster care or youth in foster care, and so I knew where I was going. I was going to Michigan State University, and I had somewhat of a plan. I had a car, and I had some belongings, and I could get there. And there's a side of me that was very resilient and self-starting, because I always had to take care of myself. The one thing was that was always constant in all of that was I could take care of myself. So I could do my laundry, I can handle my bank account, I can get a job, I can control things, because when everything is out of control, that's the one thing I can do, which is a whole new dichotomy when you come to know the Lord and find peace and redemption in that. But that was one side of it. And the other side of it was me screaming, going, will somebody love me? I'm seeing all of my friends and peers have families who are throwing them graduation parties, and we're going to be driving them to college and are going to be there for them for the holidays. And inside, I was this little kid who just wanted to be loved, who just wanted to have what the rest of them weren't. And it was a really hard time. I think while I was going through it, I don't think I realized how hard it was. Actually, I know I didn't realize how hard it was. I was all focusing on the I could be independent and be this go-getter and go do it and survive. But looking back, it was rough.
Well,
so I got a quick question.
Okay.
There's a song that came to my mind. I'm looking for love in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
Were you were you fortunate enough to stay out of that? Or were you so tell me.
I followed that same
yep.
path. I distinctly remember having a day where I was on a run and thinking, well, if I can't find love with family, I'm going to find make my own family, and I'm going to find other ways. And unfortunately, I did turn to drugs and alcohol and inappropriate relationships with men and bad relationships with food and my health, and ended up getting pregnant in college. And, our role here at Focus is under Advocacy for Children is, you know, the preborn and women choosing life. And I was contemplating abortion, but then I ended up having a miscarriage. So one of the statistics is that a lot of young women leaving foster care is that they will get pregnant. And I was one of the statistics. Now, God had a different path, and I didn't carry the term, and that has its own scars. I got through all of that. I sunk into a very deep, dark depression. But I had some great friends who knew the Lord and reached out to me and were always there. And they started planting seeds, and that was the ray of light poking through the darkness that got me through everything.
Helen, isn't it great to have a program like this where we can unfold these things, unpack them, because we don't have any idea who's listening and going exactly mm-hmm. through what you're getting ready. Can you imagine, Keith, Vance or Nan Ruth? That's my parents. My dad said when I was about 42 that I should leave the house. My dad said you're enlisting or you're going to the war or whatever you're going to do.
Whatever.
We're going to support you. But think about this for a minute. Let's paint this picture for you that just joined us. Helen Richardson's now with Focus on the Family. Such great credentials. But imagine this. The people she stayed with say, Helen, you're a great girl, but guess what?
Your birthday's Tuesday.
Yeah, you're out of here Wednesday.
You're out of here Wednesday.
But yet with her, got the car, got the clothes, Michigan State, you could have probably picked another school, but that's all right. We'll let you be a Spartan for a minute. And now I'm going to go be self-sufficient. That's okay. We get to the dorm. You find your roommate. You get in. But then what happens when the dorm closes for a week or two? Where do you go?
Anywhere and everywhere. That's where I reached out. Somebody, sometimes it was a roommate or a girl on the floor or a friend's family who said, hey, come stay with us for a holiday. I'd get creative and try to find, you know, different projects. Like over the summer, I'd find a job that would provide housing for the whole summer so I'd have some place to go. And I just took it each situation at a time.
Faith was not a part of the foster program for you. Any of those families that you were with share faith to you to some degree or any degree?
No, not that I remember on that side of it, and definitely not my family.
Wow.
But God was there, because there were times where faith showed up in ways that didn't make sense. Like there was, I think I was 8 years old living with a grandmother. My grandmother didn't have any openness or heart to the Lord. And one day, a young woman in the community whose father was a pastor was going around and inviting people to their church. And I was hiding in the hallway. My grandmother, she probably knew, let's be real. All the adults know what's going on with kids. I was hiding in the hallway, and I remember hearing the woman ask if they would wanted to go to church. And my grandmother said, no, but you can take my granddaughter. And for one summer, I got to go to this church and go through these different programs and Sunday school. And this young woman came and picked me up every Sunday and every Wednesday when school started. And so for a short time, I did go to church, and I didn't know any of these names, who this Jesus was, and where these stories of these fishes and loaves, but it was such a safe, loving environment, and it planted a little seed. And then like 5 years later, I got an opportunity to go to a VBS with a friend who I was staying with while my relatives were on a vacation. And of all the timing of the week of their one vacation, it lined up with this family's VBS journey. And so while it wasn't distinct in the homes I was in or the families I was in, the seeds were there, and the Lord was guiding all of it.
So, Helen, let's kind of keep going and say, okay, at what point in our journey, as we're looking down through our journal, did the turning point take place? You've had the miscarriage. You've got this lifestyle mm-hmm. that you say, oh, my gosh, you got to sit back. This is not doing me any good. There's those internal checks and balances that you do. Where was the turning point?
I was in college. I was sitting on the couch one afternoon. I had skipped class. just kind of angry, and turned on the TV. And there was a program talking, I think it was a program talking about work that they were doing in Africa, and especially around young women. And the program wasn't about family, but something in it clicked in my head. And I realized, oh, I need actual family. I think I still have some family. So I had grown up with my mom's family, which had not been a good relationship. But my father, I knew, who had died when I was three, I knew he had family somewhere. So I started, you know, early 2000s, started digging from what little I knew of information, and found them in California, and got to start writing letters and interacting with them, and went to go visit them one summer, and walked over the threshold. And my aunt, sitting in the chair, didn't say hi, hello. She just said, do you know Jesus? And my first reaction was like, oh, my God, these are crazy Christian people. But I spent a week with this family, and they took in someone that they didn't know. They'd met me as a small young toddler child, but they didn't know me, but they loved me. And there was something different about their life. They had this peace. They didn't all have perfect lives. They weren't in fancy houses. But they had this peace and this love and this purpose that I just was so jealous and yearning for. And so one day I was sitting in their guest room, and I'm writing in a journal, because I journaled all my years of counseling therapy did pay into that. And these words pop into my heart, and it was a Bible verse. And so I'm like, I didn't know the word, so I went out and asked my cousin's wife, what does this word mean to you? And she said, oh, that's a Bible. It's a chapter in the Bible. So she gives me the Bible, and I go searching for it. And it's the verse that says, by whom you were called into the fellowship of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And I was like thrown on the floor. Like, this is a direct invitation from the Lord to come and know me. And I had no knowledge of the Bible, none of this. And so just the fact that this verse was given to me by the Holy Spirit, and I just went, okay, I need this. And I gave my life to the Lord and their kitchen tiles from the linoleum floor, and went back to college and realized I need to change my life. I can't keep doing this. And just got on a new path of pursuing the Lord and changing my ways and getting connected with family and faith. And I've been on that walk ever since.
How did you get connected with Focus on the Family after college, I guess, at some time?
Hang on. Can I ask a quick
career?
Question, buddy? Do
well,
you mind?
Sure, yeah.
Did you have any Campus Crusade for Christ? Did you have any crew? Did you have any anything like that back at Michigan State, FC? Or
you know, I know that they were there. My friend who I worked with at a small clothing store, she was part of just an evangelical group from a couple of local churches that worked together and had their own campus college organization. And she invited me to a few things, but she was the one who, their family invited me to holidays. She prayed with me. She walked with me. We're still friends today. She's still working with college kids, which is amazing. And, that was kind of the group. But I know Campus Crew was there. I just didn't have any direct connections to it.
So how'd you get connected with Focus on the Family?
You know, I have been a long time. My background before working at Focus was healthcare philanthropy, so I did fundraising for hospital systems and was in a job in another state, and just I lived in for the parent company was in Colorado, and I just wanted to get back to Colorado. I have some extended family here. I liked living here. The job was getting really hard on me, so I had applied for some jobs in the area, and one of them happened to be a role within Focus, and it was a different role. It was working in their marketing operations area, and so I came and joined Focus for that role, and within a year, the position in the foster care and adoption team opened up, and they came over and said, hey, we know you, and we know your story, do you want to come over? So, again, the Lord directing all the paths that I never in my life would have thought that, without having a social work degree, that I could be in this space, but I can use the talents that I have, the education I have, my past, and just be able to advocate for families and for children all over the nation.
Tell me.
Yeah, why, Keith, you want to give an amen to that?
Amen. Tell me what Focus does relative to fosters and adoptions and what have you. I know you're very involved, but tell me about the program itself.
Yeah, so we advocate for kids and families, just like I said. So our program is Wait No More, WAIT, that children and families would wait no more for quality homes, quality support, quality care. So we know that there are children in foster care. So we go out and partner with churches and organizations across the country and hold events to help educate and empower the people in that community. So we're going to be like in Ashland, Kentucky later this year in August. And so we're going to host an event and we're going to invite people to come and join and hear about how they can become foster parents or they can adopt from foster care, or even the bigger bucket is how do you support? You know, some people come in thinking, oh, I'm going to adopt, and then they start realizing the process or just what their life is and think, you know what, I'm going to provide respite care. So they're going to start on that path. So we're going to host the event, get them connected with those local organizations, and then they're going to start on that journey. We're really using the name and the recognition of Focus, and our tagline is to help families thrive. So that includes all families, biological families who are struggling, as well as these foster and adoptive families. We provide best-in-class faith-based resources. So we have booklets and books on topics on the whole range of foster care and adoption, from attachment, like we talked about earlier, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which is a very real thing, transracial adoption, how do you wrap love and support around families, all free. All they have to do is visit waitnomore.org, and there's a tab with a form you can fill out to request these free resources mailed to you. We provide online articles that cover topics from how does the adoption journey work, and a very long, exhaustive article for you to learn about that process, to, hey, here's a great story about a group who is, speaking of college campuses, a young group of kids that every August when they go back to school, part of their first week of going on campus and getting back into their fraternities and sororities is they hold a bag bash, and they collect suitcases and hygiene supplies and put them together, and then donate them to local child welfare offices for kids who are entering care. So there's just a lot we do just to get out and educate families and just to provide that extra support they might need.
Helen, this has been so good. We're going to put you on the spot. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You have all of our information. By the way, please say hello to Paul Batura, our good friend. He's a great guy, and we love having him many, many times on Good Morning Ozarks, Mr. Daly, and everything you all do. Would you stay in touch with the station, our producer, and every month or so, and we're not going to just talk about National Foster Care Month in May. We want to keep this on the front of our listeners. So if you would stay in touch with Darren, our producer, and then every 6 weeks or so, we'll try to have you back on and come up with a little nugget or something somebody's helping somebody with. If you would do that, we would appreciate it.
I would love to. Thank you. Yes.
Is there some fear or real nervousness about people getting involved in foster care, and how big is the need?
Yes.
Yes. You know what? My husband and I are walking this journey, and he says, you know, it's kind of great to have you, but it's also kind of intimidating because I walk this from the other side of it, but I have my own fears, my own concerns about it. We are opening up to a home to a child or children that we don't know anything about, and that can be intimidating. We don't know if we're going to get, and you can designate your age range and gender and everything. We don't know if we're going to get an 8-year-old or a 15-year-old. And I think about having a teenager. I'm only a teenager in our house right now.
Sure.
It's like, okay, what are we doing? So I know there's also the stigma, or the, not the stigma, I apologize, the misconception of I shouldn't get attached. That's a fear. If I do get attached, it's going to be so hard to let go. Yeah, it's going to be. That's good. If it's not hard, then it's not right. You want to get attached because that means that you are caring for this child and there's been a relationship, no matter the age. And that means that child is feeling it too. You want to teach this child that there are people in their life that care for them and will be for them and will mourn if that relationship is over, because there's people, sometimes when they're removed, the caregivers, whether they're parents or other relatives, don't care. And that's really hard to live in that world. So there's that fear of, you know, what happens when things get hard and I don't know what to do? Who do I call? You know, Focus on the Family has an amazing free helpline, 1-800-A-FAMILY. You can call. We have specific counselors who are trained around foster care and adoption, who have gone through extensive trauma training and can help you when that kid has punched a hole through the wall or is shutting down and not talking, whatever it might be. It's like you're not going from 9 months of in womb and then you get a little baby of how do I keep this baby alive. You're going to, and some of them might be babies, but you're going to, how do I keep this teenager alive and keep my sanity alive in this space? So, it's there's a lot of fears, but there's a lot of hope and there's a lot of need. Like I said, that number is really big, and not all of those 423,000 need homes today. But what it tells us is that there are kids, a large amount of kids, out of their homes and not in permanent families, and that this is a continuing number. Every year this number adjusts and it rises up a little, goes down a little. And we've got 300,000 churches in the nation that we know are evangelical churches. One church, what a dent that we would know that 300,000 of these kids are in one of these churches across the country, each one of them, and that they're in faith-based, loving, caring families that know what redemption looks like. Firsthand.
And we don't even count the impact of the immigration crisis at the border where they're coming without parents. There's a statement that you made in your little release that I love that we'll close with this. You will not always know your impact, but you're always impactful, Keith.
That's good.
Yeah.
Hey, Helen, it's been good. Helen, now, do you have any natural kids yourself yet?
No, we are going straight to adoption from foster care. I mean, we do have the world's best dog who has currently been sitting right next to me the whole time. And she's pretty sure she's a human. But no, we are going to adopt from foster care and get her a big sibling and start there. Yeah.
All right. We understand. Just go to Chewy and get whatever you want delivered to your door. Helen, God bless you. Thank you so
Helen,
much.
Helen, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Have
we'll talk to you next time from Focus on the Family. All right. See you, Helen.
Helen Richardson. Bye-bye.